is an Auburn Network production.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Thursday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well on a day that started out as a beautiful day. Boy, we got a serious downpour. I think wherever you were in Auburn, it rained pretty hard. Had our yard guy, the guy that handles the lawn treatments and things like that, had texted me around midday and said, "Hey, I'm going to be in your side of town. Would it be all right if I came and treated the lawn?" Then when he got there, he said, "You think we're going to have 30 minutes before it rains?" And I said, "I don't know. I guess so. It doesn't usually rain this early." So he got out and did the yard, and we were fortunate. From the time he finished, it was right at an hour. I mean, it didn't rain in our neighborhood out near Chihuahua until around 1 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Because he texted me at, it wasn't 1 o'clock, it was 2 o'clock, almost 2 o'clock
yeah.
is when it rained out there. He texted me at around 1:15 and said, "It is pouring in my neighborhood. I'm really concerned. Has it rained at your house?" And it's like, well, no, it hadn't. But I mean, so I thought, oh, we're lucky here, because it was sunny at 1:15. By 1:30, it was dark. By 2 o'clock, it was coming in buckets.
Mm-hmm.
My little little rain gauge showed that we got 2 inches of rain in about a half an hour. It came.
There's quite a bit in the forecast over the next.
Oh, you're not
week,
kidding.
Week plus. So
yeah, as far as I can see in the forecast.
I guess if it's that or sweltering heat. You know, and then we'll take a little bit wetter of a June,
right.
and maybe even July than we usually get. But yeah, we've had some pretty gnarly storms blow through, and it doesn't seem like it's necessarily over. I'm not gathering two of every animal yet.
I don't think that's the case. Hey, I will say this though. I mean, I was telling Don this a while ago. I had not had to put a
I'd
drop
find a spot of, for you, Coach, on the arc. I'd find
please, you need a cook, right?
That's right. Yeah, oh, of course.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
and we'll have plenty of animals.
I'll tell you what animals to bring.
Yeah, there you go.
What not to bring?
Bring more than two of us.
Yeah.
Some of them.
I like this version of the story.
Yeah, we'll get together on that.
That may be why
you're there's out.
Some,
you're
maybe,
in.
Maybe why that's some. Some species are extinct. Yeah,
that's why. That's what happened to the woolly mammoth.
I mean, you're on board for more than a month.
Yeah.
Supplies might get low.
Some people missing too.
Yeah, the Flintstone ribs.
Yeah.
Oh man. On the side of the vehicle to flip you over. But no, I mean, I had not had to add a drop of water to my pool. As a matter of fact, I'd had to. Let water out multiple times. So I mean, it has been a wet spring, and I'm not complaining. The only thing is it sure seems to make it quicker that you need to get your yard cut, things like that. But anyway, hopefully the rain's done for this afternoon, and we welcome you in to the Thursday Drive. I'm about to call.
Yeah, I was going to say there's not a ton of urgent Auburn news since the last time we did the show. And as we've said before, Coach, you know, this is a 60 or 90 day period,
right,
where the coaching staffs are totally fine with all quiet.
Yes.
on every front.
Yeah, you don't want any late calls like we talked last week. Just keep everybody healthy, doing what they're supposed to do, and no trouble.
Are there now? This would be a time for whatever we call the the workouts that, you know, the unofficials, the
they've been called the captain.
Yeah, your captain's practices work, right, or like the, this feels like, especially in the era of roster turnover, you know, the era of free transfers.
Right.
This feels like an important time because you've got so many new teammates that are going to be on the field this fall. This, this would be like a, I know Bruce Pearl always talks about the chemistry building that happens in June and July.
Right.
Feels like now more than ever with a lot of new teammates that this is an important time for that kind of stuff to be happening.
Yeah, for sure. And like I said, they'll have a lot of stuff for them to do even if the coaches are not around. And that's what, like you said, build their leadership, who your team leaders are, and they'll know what they're doing. I mean, it's they'll have scripts and everything for them, film study, and plus with all their conditioning and training.
Is that why returning production feels like, I mean, we called it a luxury during the basketball season last year, Bill, remember? Like, it's like when you, because now a lot of your best players are either moving on or could very well test the market, and like they're either moving on to the pro level,
or they could just
test the market and move, you know, across the country. You know, it feels like when you have guys who played last year and understand the expectations and the standards, like that maybe makes it easier, or at least I can imagine for a coach that's preferable to a whole bunch of new players that have a lot to learn.
Yeah, no question. You want the experience. You want guys that have been in the program and know how you want it done and how it needs to be done. And, yeah, with all the new guys coming in, it's so important now, the summers, even much more than when I was coaching. And they were important then. But there's more emphasis now because, like you said, Dan, you might have a guy that's never been on campus showing up.
Well, I don't know.
Basketball's obviously the situation with basketball.
Right.
For football, Auburn is extremely fortunate that they had everybody, but all but six players were here for the spring. Yeah. So, I mean, it's not nearly as much of the learning each other type situations as there are in basketball.
Yeah. Well, think about, I mean, the D-line would be a spot where, I mean, you have two players coming back from last year's team who saw the field quite a bit on the interior, Malik Blockton and Bobby Jamison Travis. The rest of that group is either newly arrived from high school or newly arrived from the transfer portal. Yeah. And I just, I mean, I have to imagine, like, it's like I don't know if you experienced like how many seasons you experienced where there was a lot of you know, brand new faces in your position room, but like it's got to be a relief to have those guys that went through the fire last year.
Oh yeah, no doubt. No, we were fortunate. I mean, but we did. It's completely different now.
Yeah,
you know, we kind of knew, and a lot of the guys had redshirted, so you know now they were getting their turn. They were moving up.
You had an idea what the room might look like a year from now or two years from now in a way that coaches probably don't.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know how they do it now. I mean, that's just blows my mind that you're sitting there with six, seven guys, and then next year could be four or five new ones.
It could be or
more.
Yeah, could be seven or eight new ones.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. And, and you know, and like Bill said, we're fortunate because there has not been a great number of turnover. Like last year, we had a lot of new faces.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, hopefully that's all positive. And it is, I would think, as a coach.
I mean, you know, really, when you look at the situation with Auburn, Coach, I mean, it's everything points to this. There should be marked improvement this
year. Yes, yes.
And if there's not, then I don't see good reasons for it.
No.
You know what I mean?
It's no.
Like the talent's better. The players should be more familiar with the system, with each other, with what's expected of them.
Mm-hmm.
The schedule is – I mean, look, it's an SEC schedule.
Mm-hmm.
But it is not the worst schedule that anybody could get. And now this week we got the times, at least the windows.
Yeah, and it looks like games
it's favorable to Auburn.
Yeah, I mean, you got some day games on the road, which is what you want.
Right.
You got hopefully Georgia at home at night, which we haven't had in years. And yeah, I mean, it looked good. from what I could tell, you want to always play on the road early as possible.
Yeah, and you've got Arkansas at 11 o'clock.
Yeah, that's great.
And
you could play Baylor and Oklahoma at night.
Baylor and Oklahoma could be a night game. It's either afternoon or night. Baylor is a night game.
Yeah, those games will be tough no matter when you play.
And you want to play Baylor at night because it's going to be a little cooler, but it's going to be hot.
It's going to be hot in August. August 29th or whatever. Oh, yeah.
College Station at 3:30 in the middle of September is probably not going to be a picnic either. You've been to a game there.
Yeah,
so.
And if you're and when you're sitting in the visiting section, you're generally up there, in the nosebleeds. Yeah. Close. And it just feels like you're closer to the sun. It's hotter.
And you're just rocking back.
You can reach out and touch the surface of
and
the
stadium's rocking, the sun, man.
From, it does.
Kyle Field.
It's scary.
Yeah. So that's. I think it feels like a huge bet because I would agree almost everywhere about what you said, Bill. But it's a huge bet on Jackson Arnold.
It is.
Like that. That's the one place where, like, if you and until you see, it's just hard to project transfer quarterbacks in general. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, I think if you're using last year's stats, then you feel great about the guy Oklahoma went and got, John Mateer. You know, unreal numbers at Washington State, but what's the exchange rate versus...
I don't know. I mean, the numbers that Arnold had after he came back and was a starter are, I mean, you project that to a full season with a better receiving
with
core.
A better talent.
He had a bunch, basically a bunch of walk-ons last year, and Auburn's offensive line should be as good or better than what he was playing with at Oklahoma last year.
Reasons to believe Jackson Arnold could work, for sure. Like, reasons to believe this could be, this could be what unlocks an offense that, struggled in the red zone, struggled on crucial downs last year, probably had too many turnovers in a couple of the losses. Like, if you can cut back on some of that, there were 8 or 9. Well, just pick the losses from last season, right? Like, there were probably 5 losses last year where a couple of plays could have been the difference. And we've seen recently in college football teams that have turned that into great success 1 year later. This past year's Colorado team, like Deion's Colorado team in year 2, they went from losing a bunch of close games in his first season to being one of the better teams in the Big 12 in his second. So, I mean, I think we've seen even recently, that if you're close a year later, you can go over the top
and you make the right changes.
If you make the right changes, and I think that's like it feels easier going into this season. Alabama and Georgia are probably the exceptions. Everyone else in the SEC that people are bullish on, I think it's based largely on what you saw from the quarterback a year before.
Mm-hmm.
When people talk about South Carolina, when people talk about Florida. LSU with Nussmeier, who I know people are really really high on, A&M, right, with the A&M quarterback who played for closed the season for them, and even with Oklahoma, it's based on the quarterback and how he played at Washington State the year before. Bama, Georgia, and Texas are probably the exceptions. I don't know what we know of Arch Manning.
Texas, the expectations for Arch Manning have been there, since he was in high school.
Sure. Yeah. And then I think with Georgia and Bama, it's just like it's almost quarterback proof.
You feel like whoever they plug in is gonna have enough talent around him.
I'll tell you what, are you sure both of those teams I guess I just use quarterback proofing the offense, right, where you just have enough talent everywhere else that you probably have a guy who can do it. Are we sure?
No.
With either of those teams? That's what I mean.
You probably feel a little better about Georgia because you saw
a little of their
guy.
I get why folks project either of them as top 5 teams based on overall talent, but that's a big
if.
That's a big if on a team that's making.
Alabama lost 3 games last year with a guy who was ridiculously athletic at quarterback. And
Have you heard the story about Milroe? What's going on? So there's apparently, I think this is probably an overreaction. Apparently Sam Darnold has not looked sharp in Seattle, and folks in Seattle remember when the Seahawks went and got Matt Flynn and paid him a bunch of money as a free agent, and Russell Wilson was the better quarterback as a rookie, like from the moment he arrived. There are folks who are more impressed with Milroe so far in practices in Seattle. That's like, I guess that's been the buzz through early Seahawks offseason practices. People are, and I can understand why, especially in 7-on-7s and like, if you've never seen Milroe before and you suddenly get a glimpse
he's even more dangerous when he's in the open field.
Yeah.
I mean, just he is fast. He is legitimately fast. He's not just fast for a quarterback. Yeah. He's fast.
I could see the Darnold thing going sour and Milroe getting a shot in Seattle. And I guess some other folks envision that possibility too.
All right. We're just underway. First lawsuit's already been filed.
Flying.
In the House versus NCAA settlement. We'll talk about that and more. We'd love for you to join in. It's Bill, Dan, Don, and Drew here on the Thursday edition of The Drive. You can call us on The Drive hotline, 334-321-1390, and that's sponsored by Skybar.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840 on The Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
So come on in and join us. We're just underway here on the Thursday Drive.
The Drive, 106.7, and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Bill, Dan, Coach Don Dunn, Drew at the controls. Again, we'd love for you to join in. We'll get to the lawsuit here. We were talking during the break as Dan was mentioning a double eagle, a rare double eagle in the U.S. Open today, where, as expected, not a lot of low scores. 15 golfers are under par, led by J.J. Spawn and Sung J.M.
Well, how's Koivun doing? We should check in on the Auburn amateur, who's probably somewhere in that list. But yeah, Patrick Reed recording the double eagle, the albatross, from 286 out on the par 5 fifth hole at Oakmont. Reed hit a second shot, a fairway wood, in the cup from 286 out, to give him the albatross, the double eagle. So he's one of the 15 golfers
under par. He's at one under, right? Jackson Koivun is two over.
Okay.
He shot a 72. Today. So pretty respectable there.
Absolutely. An excellent showing. I mean, there are some brand names that did not shoot a 72.
Oh, you're right.
Today at the U.S. Open. So the Auburn amateur, absolutely, you know, in a on a challenging course, holding his own. It would be really cool to see him. As Andy said, not the last time he will play in a Grand Slam.
No, in a master
golf tournament. Okay. So, I mean, he's going to be major. He's going to be there in the he'll be there at the main event level for a long time. Very cool to see him there representing Auburn as an amateur.
Yeah. So again, we'll keep an eye on there. But four under is the lead right now on day one there at Oakmont. Mentioned that there's already a lawsuit that has been filed as a group of eight women. Arguing that the House versus the NCAA settlement violates Title IX. And
which is odd, because I believe, I mean, and I guess it's crucial here that they disagree with the ruling of the judge who approved the settlement, right? Because Title IX.
Yeah, they filed an appeal of the settlement.
Title IX was considered.
Yeah, and Judge Wilkins said that shouldn't be considered in this situation, but also said that there could be some litigation about that after the fact,
and I believe that the Department of, I think this would be the Department of Justice, but there was federal guidance that this wasn't a Title IX issue as well. So yeah, not surprising that there's already a lawsuit, and apparently this is about the back payments, right? Like this is about the way Title IX is. Like it is. I guess it's a slightly different thing than what we usually talked about with Title IX, because I think folks thought, does Title IX mean that schools have to distribute the revenue evenly between men's sports and women's sports, the $20.5 million?
Yeah, that, as I read this, I can't really tell if that is exactly what they're asking.
I believe this lawsuit is about the back pay and determining how they plan to determine value for the for women who played in, because there's a period of eligibility where you as a former student athlete,
over the last 10 years or so,
you can pursue.
All right, their attorney Ashlyn Hare said this settlement, quote, deprives female athletes of $1.1 billion, went on to say. The settlement suggests schools would have paid male athletes over 90% of their revenue over the past 6 years, as though Title IX didn't apply. So she's saying that, yes, that past revenue should not be paid out. They object that it goes back into the past and is paying 90% of the revenue to male athletes.
Yeah, I believe the interpretation of those filing the lawsuit would be that Title IX does apply here and it should be a 50-50 split, right? Like, I think that's the thinking behind. And I don't know if that's made clear, but one would think if you're using Title IX to pursue equal opportunity here with the NIL issue, I wonder if they want an even.
They have, apparently they haven't really pushed back on the revenue sharing from this point on. I haven't seen, indication that they're filing an appeal on that.
This is going to delay the back pay.
Yes, I know it is. The back pay has been put on stay,
and they're going to have to figure that out. I still don't think this is enough to change, the fact that it's all systems go from the major conferences as far as distributing revenue directly to the clearinghouse and the CSC and the direct payments, that's all kicking into gear. Like, that's, it feels like you're barring something very significant, doesn't feel like you're slowing that down right now. That feels like a tough one. It's going to be tough to go once schools start distributing revenue directly to students. It's going to be tough to flip that switch and go back to.
Well, again, this is supposed to be separate from NIL.
Right.
So if you have a legitimate NIL deal, you should still be able to get that regardless of what you're getting from the revenue sharing.
And one would think that the kind of players that move the needle in recruiting in football and men's basketball, there are going to be NIL deals for those players, whether it's apparel contracts or different opportunities with their social media platforms. Like, one would think there's still going to be NIL deals.
Yeah, you would think so.
On top of whatever the revenue sharing is. So yeah, I think it's not surprising that there's already some litigiousness about this this settlement, but I have to imagine it's going to be, look, this,
it won't
this
be the last.
Yeah, slowing this train down, right, or stopping it now that it's left the station. I don't know. It's going to be it's tough. It's like wagon train, right? Slowing down the old slowing down wagon train is going to be.
It's like You've started down that snow covered mountain. How are you going to stop?
You're not.
The ball just keeps getting bigger and bigger. All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Come on in and join us here on the Thursday Drive, 334-321-1390. That'll get you through.
On Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Bill, Dan, Coach Don Dunn, love for you to join in. Anything you want to talk about sports-wise as we head sort of, we're into the list, speculation, predictions.
Yeah.
time of year.
Are the magazines out yet, Bill?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. There's some preseason publications out.
Remember the old
days?
That's all you really had to go by.
Yeah, there were a couple in particular that you needed to get.
You always bought.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you couldn't wait to get them.
I don't think Phil's out with his yet, but we've seen some their preseason lists, preseason polls, preseason, you know,
there are even
top this and that.
There are even, and you have the over unders for teams, you know, for the regular season, and you're seeing, depending on where you look, you're seeing more folks that are willing to put point spreads out for the first couple of weeks of the season. I've been incorrect over the last couple of times we've talked about this, where I've said, yeah, Auburn probably an underdog in all three of those road games to start the year in the first 5 weeks. Right now, if you look at Auburn-Baylor, Auburn is a slight favorite. Mm-hmm. If you were to shop around on the Auburn-Baylor game, Auburn's given Baylor 2 to 3 points, depending on who's listing it, and is a slight favorite on the money line. So it's not necessarily correct to say Auburn's an underdog in all of those to begin the season, even though I think A&M and Oklahoma probably tougher propositions earlier than Baylor, but at least one of those games, I think folks think not only does Auburn have a shot of winning it, but in fact Auburn might be the team expected to go in there and win.
We were talking about it yesterday, Don. I mean, yeah. I don't think that anyone would say Auburn's going to be out talented by Baylor.
Right.
I don't know that Oklahoma has more talent than Auburn.
No.
And I think Auburn's pretty darn close to A&M now with what they've done here over the last couple of years.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yes. I mean, I can see those games being considered toss-ups, though.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I don't see them having a big advantage roster-wise. Playing on the road, that's tough. But, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if we won all three.
Did you cross paths with Dave Aranda in your time? I know he was more of a he was out of the West Coast for a time before.
Not really,
LSU.
Not that I can remember. No, I don't think so.
But he was on the hot seat going into last year.
He was. And I mean, and did a great job. Mm-hmm. Did a great job as Orgeron's DC.
Yeah,
to get that Baylor job. I mean, the last couple years of that LSU. I mean, they've probably. Mm-hmm. They've probably missed him more than they thought they would after he left in 2019.
Yeah,
as a defensive coordinator. But no, he was in. I mean, when I say he was out the Cal Lutheran and Southern Utah, mm-hmm. and he was at Hawaii for a while before making the jump back to the
kind of getting lost over there.
Back to the mainland. But no, he's a. I mean, he's not an easy place to win either.
No,
Baylor's not a. Until
a few years ago, they I remember them when Coach Steele was out there. They were like 0-12.
Yeah. I mean, they do have, like we were talking about, Texas Tech,
right?
Like they do have some motivated alumni, mm-hmm. and without Texas and Oklahoma in the conference, maybe it feels a little more attainable.
Mm-hmm.
So you could see a more competitive and more consistently good Baylor program over the next. A few years, but no, you're right, Bill. Aranda was feeling the heat, and probably can't afford a step back this year. Like I think if they were to regress, I think they're deep enough in his tenure that they would start to wonder if they've got the right people in charge.
Yeah, well, I mean, he had to make some changes. He had Jeff Grimes as his offensive coordinator. They weren't happy there, and Jeff went to Wisconsin, and Baylor's offense was better last year. So, I mean, you see it. I mean,
yeah,
everyone considered that a great hire when Baylor got Dave Aranda, and it was funny because for a year or so. Their offense was better than their defense.
I like the guy they brought in. Spavital was was Texas State's head coach for a couple of years. He was Cal's offensive coordinator when Auburn played at Cal in 23. That wasn't a great season, but Cal had problems, all over the field there with personnel. But he was A&M's offensive coordinator for a couple of years, you know, about a decade ago under would that have been Jimbo?
Jimbo.
It might have been pre-Jimbo.
Or was it?
I think it was Sumlin. I think he was
I think he was pre, maybe even the Manziel year.
Like, so he's, I mean, he's a solid coach and a guy who, a very Texas guy, right? Mm-hmm. And I think thinking, like, not only, you know, the thought that if you're running someone, if you got someone who's running a very you know, who's running schemes that are easy for Texas high school players to jump into immediately. You know, I know high school football's it's a different sort of thing out there, Coach.
Yeah, it was under someone in 14 and 15.
Yeah.
But the thought that you could run, you know, if you're someone who's well connected in the Texas high school ranks, that could give you not only is he an excellent play caller and a guy who knows how to develop an offense, he can find players that can that can come right into his system and step in immediately.
Yeah, for sure. It's so important out there. You know, that state is so big, and there's such good high school players that, you know, you have those great connections and inroads, because it's tough recruiting Texas. There's so many good schools that are wanting the top guys, and not only from Texas, but other schools go into Texas to steal them. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. That's going to be an interesting first game.
It is a very important first game.
Yes.
For Auburn. I mean,
and you can cut it any way you want.
You lose that one.
Yeah.
And
it's just the expectations.
You're right. I mean, because the next two weeks,
you'd be miserable.
You know, you're getting ready for that road trip to A&M in Oklahoma.
And nothing you can do.
Yeah, you're right.
Exactly. Nothing you can do in the paycheck games is going to convince people. Just like last year.
Right.
Like last year you had a slam dunk contest against Alabama A&M.
Right.
And you went out a week later and it didn't really matter against Cal.
Right.
And then you made a quarterback change, and the backup looked great. You know, Hank looked great against the paycheck opponent that came in. And then against Arkansas, it didn't work.
Right.
So it's like, I mean, it's clearly,
as a coach, man, I never, we had that first tough opening game. I hated having a paycheck game after that, win or lose. But if you lost, it was awful.
Yeah.
I remember in 05, we lost our opener at, I think, Georgia Tech. And then I think we had like a Western Kentucky or somebody next, or a Vanderbilt. And you don't want that. You got to try to keep them focused.
The only thing that can happen in something like that is something goes wrong.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you know, you get a star player hurt or something like that. So, no, you're right. If that, because the way the schedule sets up, if you lose the Baylor game,
it's no 3 weeks of heck.
No one's going to believe anything till the A&M
game.
Exactly. Right? Or which one's first? Oklahoma or A&M? Oklahoma's first,
Oklahoma,
right?
Oklahoma, I believe.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, no one's going to believe anything till you go to Norman. And that game, I mean, I think it gets lost in all the different storylines Auburn deals with this year. I mean, Jackson Arnold going back to Norman's going to be, I mean, it's
weird.
I mean, it's weird, and it's going to be a hornet's nest.
Yeah, like, you wonder how he reacts to that, regardless of how he's played in the first three games.
Sure. I mean, the thought that's your first conference road game at Auburn, and it's at your former
you
team.
You couldn't write it any better.
Auburn's never been there before, and I mean, there's a whole bunch.
It's a tough place to play.
Right. Yeah. It's going to be
that's why the Baylor game is so important.
And you're right, Bill. And you can cut it any way you want.
You need to, you know, to just stop all the, oh, you know,
here we go again.
Yep. I mean, you got to win it. That's not going to shut everybody up, but it'll keep them quiet while you get ready for that next big one.
Yes, it'll buy you some time, if you lose it, then
you'll never hear the. It'll be constant.
You know, you'd almost prefer, like, okay, I understand why, especially if the Baylor game doesn't go according to plan. You probably would like to have a paycheck game to work out some kinks before you play a conference game. But for the reasons you were talking about, Coach, it's almost like if you lose that one, you'd be okay with turning around and playing A&M or Oklahoma right then and there.
Personally, but because it's so hard to get those guys back, and they're going to be hearing and reading, and it's so much different now than when I was coaching. You know,
oh, yeah,
they're blasted by social media. Yep. 24/7. And they hear it, they read it, they see it. And the coaches. As a head coach, you got to keep your staff together too now, because some terrible things can happen if you lose that first one. I've been there.
Yeah, no, it's a front loaded schedule.
And with what Bill said games. Earlier, third year of coach, good off season, good portal, blah blah blah. Everything's positive.
Looks like the talent looks better. Yes. The everything depth. Looks lined up.
So let's go win.
Yep. And nothing else will do.
Nothing else matters.
You know, playing it close, playing it hard, you know, putting up better stats.
Horseshoes.
The stat that better be better is the one on the scoreboard.
That's right.
That number
that's
on the
that's
scoreboard.
A bottom line, yep. Any way you cut it.
But you know what? This may be another thing that is good is that there are so many people that are skeptical because of what's happened the last couple of years that it almost puts Auburn in that situation that you've seen many, many times before where, all right, they're not expected because people just don't believe in them. They generally do better.
Yeah.
I mean, that's been Auburn's,
yeah.
That's been Auburn's history,
yeah.
Forever, it yeah. seems like, in football.
Yeah, that's true. Look at us in 2003. Pretty bad season.
I mean,
lucky to even be around. Then we turn around and go undefeated.
I would agree if you went like big picture. It is still like, I mean, we are. It's also an Auburn team that had a 15 or 16 game losing streak against ranked opponents until last season
yeah.
when they beat A&M. So it's like it was. I mean, so it's a. It was, yeah. So Bo Nix's game against Ole Miss in was that 21? That was the drought. Was so Auburn went between what October 21 and November of last year without beating a team ranked in the top 25 at the time. But
man, that tells you how tough the schedule is, though. Did you play 15 ranked teams in 3 years?
15 of them for sure.
Yeah,
but you'll get plenty of opportunities
and
against
the non-conference guys. You're looking at what Penn State and people like that. Come
yeah,
on.
For sure. I mean, I think. You feel better about the roster going into this mm-hmm. season than you have in a while, and I think that the fact that it wasn't a tumultuous offseason compared to some of the previous ones, like there are signs that it's trending in the right direction, but yeah, it's not an easy start to the season at all.
No, tough one, road trip, early.
But if you win it,
yeah.
then you feel a whole lot better because if you go out there and you'd played one of those nobodies. In game one, that wouldn't have proved anything either. I mean, you go out there and yeah. roll over them by 50 points.
Right.
And until you're starting to play somebody that everybody at least believes has a pulse, then it's not going to prove anything.
And yeah. I mean, but look, and you've got like at A&M, at Oklahoma, Georgia, and Alabama are on the schedule. You got to play them sometime. Like they're,
right.
I mean, it's you can't. Well, you want to finish the season with those four games in a row and delay until. Until then, you know what you know. So I think, yeah, you get the opportunity to find out very early on what this what this team's made of.
Yeah, no question about it. All right, we'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. Which side, which camp are you in? Are you in the are you in the positive or the negative? You're like, all right, I've seen enough of this stuff the last 2 years. It ain't going to get any better, or hey, we were close last year, and we've got more talent.
Do you get the sense there are people who are just out on freeze
yes,
and are convinced it's not going to work?
There are some people that yeah. just feel like, all right, it's been 2 years, haven't seen it. Time to move on.
Yeah,
I mean, if he doesn't, I'd say if it doesn't seem like it's working offensively this year, you wonder
well,
what
if it doesn't work this year. It's going to be hard to find. Find many people, especially that could be vocal about it, that would be in the let's keep it going.
I was
going to
say you wonder what other moves he can make, right? He's changed
right.
He's changed coaches a couple of times. Mm-hmm. He's changed quarterbacks now and recruited a brand new room mm-hmm. of guys he really likes. It's just like they're you wonder what
yeah.
what other options are
yeah,
available.
Yeah.
So.
Mm.
Yep. Well, let us know. We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. We're right back with more here on the Thursday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Coach Don Dunn, got Drew at the controls. And we're wide open. Anything you want to talk about sports-wise?
Have you heard about the Hunter Dobbins story?
Yes.
Okay, Coach Dunn, do you know about this?
No.
All right, okay. here's a rookie with the Boston Red Sox.
Drew, do you know about this?
I think so.
Yeah, okay. He made headlines the other day, Sunday. As a matter of fact,
rookie because, Red Sox pitcher from
because,
Texas.
Because he was getting the start against the Yankees. And he said, you're going to interview a rookie who's about to have his first start for the Red Sox against the Yankees. And so he said in the interview that he had circled this game because he said he hated the Yankees, that he would retire. Before he would ever play for the Yankees. If there were no other teams in baseball that offered him an opportunity to play, he would retire before he'd play for the Yankees
because
he grew up a Yankee hater. He said his father had been in the Yankees organization. And
Lance Dobbins, college baseball player from the 90s.
Yep.
Yeah, Hunter said in the interview that his father, Lance, had been drafted by the Yankees twice, had played in the Yankees minor league organization
for a couple of years,
had been traded to the Arizona Diamondbacks, played in the Diamondbacks organization for a couple of years, and during his time in the Yankees organization, his father had become friends with Andy Pettit. After saying those things, the New York Post looked into it, and none of them are true.
There's no record of his father ever playing in the Yankees organization.
There is record of Lance Dobbins playing
in the Diamondbacks organization.
No, there's not.
Oh, there wasn't?
Independent league ball.
Oh, okay. I thought that he'd been with the Diamondbacks.
There is evidence that Lance Dobbins played independent league ball for a couple of years, but none of the claims regarding his time with the Yankees or the Diamondbacks have been verified.
So I don't know how much of that is on Hunter.
No, I don't know how much of it's on Hunter.
Because your dad tells you...
What a bummer.
That he played for this organization and he hated that organization, and so you pulled for the arch rival and stuff like that, you'd tend to believe that.
Yeah, if your dad said it.
Andy Pettit told the paper he doesn't know who Lance Dobbins is.
I feel for Hunter Dobbins, who pitched well. Now, in his first inning... He had a runner on in the first pitch he threw. Somebody in the pregame, by the way, they asked Aaron Judge what he thought of Hunter Dobbins' comments about, he'd retire before he played with the Yankees. And Aaron was as diplomatic as he could be. He said, "I really don't know the young man, but I've had a great time. I've had a great time with this organization. Mm-hmm. I have nothing negative that he could think of about the Yankees."
Right.
All right, so the first time they faced each other, runner on, first pitch, bomb. I mean, Aaron Judge hit a massive homer, which was the first, I guess, he's hit homers like in his last three games now. He's up to 25. So it looked like Dobbins really going to pay, but he settled down and pitched pretty well and ended up getting the win against the Yankees.
Wow.
But, it is a strange story and one that is –
unfortunate.
Embarrassing for the family, I would say, right now.
Yeah. That's crazy. I had not heard that.
I had not heard the comments about his dad so much as I had the, retire before he'd play for the Yankees. Yeah. And then I guess that's part of the why.
Yeah. Hunter Dobbins is trying to pivot, like when he's asked about the fabrications, he's sort of pivoting to trying to get like the Bull Durham cliches back in there, and he's like, we just all want to focus on the next game, and I just can't wait to both teams are playing hard. It's like I get that he wants to take the focus off, but it's got to be a Yeah, it's got to be a tough time. Even though it's you know,
yeah, it's on his dad. It's not on him.
It's not on him. No,
you know. But I mean, he's the guy. He's the guy that's going to be out there on the mound, and that fans will be letting him know about it. So
talk about it at Thanksgiving.
Yeah, yeah,
maybe.
I would imagine. All right, we're coming to the end of hour number one. Dan, you're going to head out.
That's right. Yeah, I got something.
Family gathering. That sounds good.
I will handle the duties tomorrow.
All right. Yeah, because I am out. Tomorrow we've got to head north to a wedding, so yeah, we'd love for you to join us in hour number two. It'll be Bill and Don. Dan will be back tomorrow, so stick with us here on the Thursday Drive.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two here on the Thursday Drive. Right now, it's a nice looking afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
A little steamy a while ago after all the rain we got. I mean, we got a lot of rain in a short amount of time, and it was hot before. I mean, it felt like afternoons in the heat of summer, in the middle of summer.
Dog days, August.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, when it is so hot that all of a sudden, man, you're going to get a cloud burst. But we did that, and now it has moved on through. However, there is a really good chance of rain. It looks like just about every day for the next week and a half.
Later this evening, they say, too.
Yep. So be aware of that. But
time of year.
Yeah, it is. It's actually early for that.
Yeah, you're right.
It doesn't usually do that much in June.
Afternoon storms, yeah, that's true. That's right.
It's Bill and Coach Don Dunn here in the studio with Drew at the controls. Love for you to join us here in hour number two, which is brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at theorthoclinic.com. You can join us by calling the Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. That number is 334-321-1390. Or you can text us on the Drive text box, which is presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. That number is 334-564-1840. And Southeastern Industrial Contractors, also the sponsor of our podcast. So if you miss any of The Drive any day, you can just go wherever you get your podcasts and check out podcasts of The Drive. In hour number one, let's see. I mean, there's not a lot of big breaking local news. The Auburn, I saw the Auburn track and field team got off to a really good start yesterday. A couple of Auburn records set, as Leroy Burrell has got some sprinters. This Auburn team had finished second in the NCAAs a year ago. They go into the championships out in Eugene as the sixth ranked team, and they got off to a really good start. A couple of finalists in the 100, in the 110 hurdles. So they're off to a good start there. But, I mean, there's not a lot of action going on. I mean, that's it. That is it as far as competition for Auburn athletes, at least representing Auburn for the year.
It's kind of a slow season. Where they say quiet before the storm.
Well, I mean, it's the end of the academic year. Yeah. I mean, we saw, and we mentioned this a little earlier, that the U.S. Open underway at Oakmont, and as expected, you're not getting tons of low scores. Let's see if it's still holding up. As J.J. Spaun is now the lone leader at 4 under. You have. Again, boy, you've got some names that you don't talk about every day.
No.
That are there at the top of the leaderboard. With Spaun leading, he's got a stroke lead over Thriston Lawrence, Sungjae Im, and Rasmus Nergard Peterson. I had a little glare on the thing, and it's like, that's a longer name than I usually see. Those three golfers are at 3 under. Siwoo Kim and Cameron Young are at 2 under, and then there is a group at 1 under. Let's see. There are now only 13 golfers under par.
Mm.
So, I mean, you knew it was going to be a tough day. And Dan was talking earlier, Patrick Reed with a double eagle.
Mm-hmm.
And even with the double eagle, he is even through 14.
Yeah.
He was 1 under a little while ago. We mentioned Jackson Koivun, the Auburn amateur who has already said he's returning to Auburn next year,
mm-hmm.
and the two-time defending SEC champ is at 2 over 72. So good first round for Jackson there at in the first round of the U.S. Open. We were talking about the expectations, but the feelings heading into the 2025 football season, Don. I mean,
yeah,
it is. There are more opportunities for people to express those feelings, and we welcome those feelings
right
here on The Drive. But I mean, social media,
yeah,
and you know, people can let you know how they feel about the upcoming season. I have said, and I'm not going to back away from this.
Mm-hmm.
Auburn is in a better position,
yeah,
than they have been for a few years to make that move back to more than respectability.
Yeah,
to being able to compete with anybody on their schedule.
Yeah, no doubt, and just for the reasons we mentioned or have been mentioning, you know, they've had a good off season. They didn't have to go as deep in the portals as the past. They've got what they think is an established quarterback, got some depth, had good recruiting the last 2 years, and then the third year of coach. So, yeah, everything looks positive. And like you said, that there's really no excuses. We got to just go do it on the field.
Right. I mean, the time is now. And, I mean, the challenge is right there from the beginning of the year with that with three road games in your first five, and then the sixth game is Georgia at home. So, I mean, the first half of the season is very tough. Auburn needs to come out of it 500 or better. I would say worst-case scenario for this to be the kind of season where you feel like you have turned it around and are moving in the right direction, you'd better be at least 500, but, you know, would be better off if you could be 4-2. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline, sponsored by Sky Bar. Let's get to it. And Philly Fanatic is up first this hour. Hey, Joe, how's it going?
I'm doing well. I want to talk about this albatross. I played a lot of golf for a long time, and I actually just finished up 18 holes. To hit the ball 286 yards off
and
the ground.
Into the, yeah, no kidding. And off the ground into the hole is ridiculous.
Incredible. Yeah, I mean, that's about the same odds of that going in as to getting two hole-in-ones on 18 holes. I mean, this is so incredible.
Yeah, I mean, Dan was talking about, I don't know if you mentioned it on the air, we were talking about it off the air, that there are thousands of holes in one every year. I mean, now we're talking about it all levels and on all courses. I think he was saying there was something like 30,000.
Yeah.
30,000 holes in one, and there are fewer than 300 double eagles.
I mean, you've got to be a really big hitter to hit the ball to get it in a par five, because that's the only way you're going to get a double eagle.
Right.
You're not going to get a par four. So you,
no, it's a hole in one. Right. Yeah.
Exactly. So, I mean, most of the par fives, even for the short hitters like myself, are around 400 yards. And, you know, we can reach it in maybe two, maybe not. But to get it go in, it's just incredible.
Oh, you're absolutely right. I mean,
I want to talk to shift to football.
Sure.
So the NLI, let's say Auburn wants a quarterback, and Auburn can only pay him $1 million, but some other school can give him two. can a car dealer or somebody else make up that $1 million to get this guy at $2 million? Can you do that?
I would think yes, if he is able to convince the clearinghouse, it's not going to be checking all NIL deals over $600, that they are getting their money's worth from him for what they're paying him. In other words, it might be difficult for a car dealer. It might be more reasonable if it were like a national type car deal. That's one of the things we were talking about. I don't know how many local deals are going to be able to fly that's worth $1 million or more dollars.
Yeah,
I mean, then we'll be back to the old
under the table
Wild West show. Yep. Where people are just giving $1 million under the table. And so I guess what they're saying, you know, can they stop that? Because they couldn't stop it before.
No.
So how are they going to be able to stop it now?
Yeah, now you're going to have a completely different organization trying to do it. I mean, you're going to have the CEO of the CSC and whatever investigative and, you know, folks that they have. So I would think they'd be less equipped to do so than the NCAA.
Coach, I want to talk football with you.
Sure.
You got a minute?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right, so you and I go back to about the same time. You know, I was talking about 1969, and you said you started in 1971. Is
mm-hmm.
that right?
Yes, sir.
So I was on University of Delaware, and they ran the single wing.
Mm-hmm.
You familiar with that?
Oh, yes.
Okay, so when we line up, the coach, you know, most of the teams had no idea what was going on because there was so much eye candy going on.
Right, so much movement.
So what they were doing, the coach always said, the defensive coach says, don't go for the guys that are moving around. Just follow the ball. So how did you deal with that?
Well, that sounds good, doesn't it? But what I guess he was saying, it's just like facing the option. It's assignment exactly. Football. Everybody has an assignment. So don't be – I think what he was saying, you know, when all that motion goes and that wing back goes in motion and yeah. The guards are pulling, don't, you know, focus on that. Focus on your responsibility and play your gap, and hopefully the ball will come to that gap. Yeah, that's a crazy statement, but it's very true.
Yeah, that's what he was telling the linemen, you know. You
yeah.
Find that like you're talking about and stay with it, and that's your job. You
yeah.
Know? And then, the guy on the outside cannot let that guy get around him.
Right. You got to set the edge. Yeah, set the edge. Exactly right. But it's so hard to say that and to do that, you know, with all that movement. And it's a great offense. And, you know, Delaware was – they did it probably as good as anybody in the world and won a lot of football games.
They won two national championships
yeah.
in that group. And the athletic director came from Michigan. So
mm-hmm.
Since that time, Delaware's always wore the Michigan outfit.
Right. I like their uniforms. Yeah, for sure.
So
who was the coach? Help me with the coach.
I'm trying Tubby Raymond.
Yes, yes. Famous coach.
And his son was the first Philly fanatic.
You're
is that right?
Me.
I did not know that.
That's funny.
Well, Bill, you remember there was, you know, of course you know the DuPonts. Well,
uh-huh. Well, I don't know them, but yeah, I know who they are.
Okay, I knew
right.
a couple in school.
Yeah.
Anyway, one wing of them was the Carpenter, and was the Carpenter who owned the Phillies.
Mm.
That was they put a lot of money into. Well, the DuPonts put money into in the University of Delaware for chemical engineering guys to develop rayon and balon and all that kind of stuff in the paint. But anyway, he put a good bit of money into the stadium. It's not, you know, that stadium then was kind of like Auburn's was like 50 years ago. It was like with the metal seats and stuff, but it was still a good stadium.
Yeah.
We played some fairly decent teams. I don't know if Delaware had ever played Auburn, but they would come down like Penn and those schools because in April it was still snowing up there.
Mm-hmm.
They had to come down to play. Anyway, the other thing that the defensive coach would say to the backs, he said, you need to play don't let anyone to the outside as well. You play him to the inside. Make sure that that guy that gets the ball, that you're going to tackle him in front of you.
Right.
They
want to funnel everything inside. You're exactly right. You don't want to get beat on the perimeter.
Yep. They had two quarterbacks that were in the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. You know, they had Joe Klecko, who's still playing, but they also had this guy named what's his name, Gaston. I'm trying to think of his name. He was the quarterback for L.A. when L.A. Raiders lost to San Francisco. Hmm. I can't think of his name, but anyway, they had some good. And how they got the quarterback? This is pretty interesting. Penn State would get five. They would get five or six quarterbacks, right?
Yeah.
And so you're on the depth. You're down at number five. So what do you do with
Rich Gannon?
Rich Gannon, that was
good player.
They lost, I guess, fairly close one to San Francisco, and I think Joe Montana was the quarterback on the other team. Can't remember. That goes back a long time.
Yeah.
Montana would throw that ball to that guy Clark.
Yeah,
guy
big tight end. Yep. Woo! What a player!
Big lot of quarterbacks.
Yes, sir.
Touchdown. Anyway, I kind of lost my train of thought. But anyway, I like going back to those days when, you know, that single wing is basically a running quarterback.
Yeah, mm-hmm. For sure.
Right.
I was going back to the Penn State quarterbacks. So they would get five, but only two or three would stay. And they try to make defensive backs or tight ends and these guys that, you know, they played high school, they wanted to be the quarterback, right?
Mm-hmm.
They were Mr. Everything on their team. So Joe and a number of these other guys, they'd end up leaving to go to Delaware and places like that because they were going to start right away.
Right.
They didn't have the transfer back there. If you transferred, I guess you had to kind of sit out. But,
right. You could drop down, though.
Yeah, you could go down and play. But you had to, yes, exactly
they
right.
They played right away. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah. That's great.
All everything out of. I remember that when at our high school, Notre Dame came first. If you were all state, they would recruit you. And then if you were all like division or something like that, Penn State would recruit you. But if you were just really good on your team, but you couldn't make those, then University of Delaware would.
Yeah, and they did a great job.
Yeah, no kidding. They were really, really good year after year.
Yeah.
Okay, well, it was good talking to you, Coach.
Thank you, buddy.
Hopefully the Braves can make some adjustments by getting the All-Star game because
they are struggling. I mean, they got Ronald Acuna Jr. back, and he's hitting it. But, their bullpen is a big, big problem.
Yeah, they got some good teams in front of them. I don't think the Phillies and the Mets are going to come back down.
Mm. No, I think you're right. I think you're right. Those two pretty good looking teams.
Yeah.
All right. Well, take it easy, and it'll be interesting to see who wins this Open. And there's of the top four or five betting, none of those guys are. I guess
it's not a who's who. It's a who's that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's all about hitting it into the fairway.
Yeah, yes, that's right.
One hole that's got like six or seven sand traps on it. That's ridiculous.
Crazy.
Hopefully Auburn, you know, Auburn's going to be better in football, but then you have to look at the rest of the teams are going to be better, mm-hmm. too. So,
yeah.
We'll see. But everybody says it's whether the quarterback is going to be there or not. I think it's the offensive line because I think the quarterbacks they've had have been pretty good, but they're always running for their life.
Well, they need an improved offensive line. There's already been some talk about the left tackle transfer being a pro prospect. Of course, we heard the same thing a couple of years ago. Yeah. We need to see it on the field.
Yeah. I think the rest of the guys they have are pretty good, mm-hmm. and we'll hopefully that the betting line 7.5. So I guess if they do 8, we'll be happy to win 8 games and maybe do a bowl game and win that.
That'd be nice.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, good hearing from you, Philly Fanatic.
Bye-bye.
All right, take care. All right, we'll get to our first break here in hour number two. Love for you to join in. Anything on your mind sports-wise here on the Thursday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7.
Online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Bill and Coach Don Dunn here in the studio. Drew at the controls. Excuse me. You know, one of the things this time of year, I mean, it's folks are planning vacations, are already going ahead and taking vacations. We're not going on vacation this weekend, but I mean, we're leaving town. I just thought I wanted to ask Don. Cut me off just a sec. There, sorry about
Bless
that.
Bless you.
I'm one of those little tickle things in my throat.
And I know, it's like, you can't get rid of it.
Oh, man, no kidding. All right. Do you have what was your favorite summer trip? Could have been as a youngster, as an adult. Hmm. Do you have, like, favorite summer vacation or trip? My family, when I was young, my family would try to go somewhere. I mean, we'd generally go to the beach,
yeah.
but that was only an hour or so away. I mean, when you want to go somewhere that you're going to be gone for a few days, my family would. Dad was a ship's captain,
yeah,
and so he was able to work it out where he was usually off during the summer.
Mm.
He got it. He had enough seniority,
right?
And had been, at it long enough where he could time it. He'd be gone for 2.5 months, be back in port, which was usually New Orleans, for a couple of weeks while they were unloading and then reloading, and then gone for 2.5 months. Do that 3 times, then he'd get pretty much 3 months off.
Yeah.
And so what they did is mom and dad got. They got one of those pull behind little campers.
Yeah.
And would go, let's see, they for 3 straight years, it was like one summer was to the mountains. The next summer was like down toward the Keys. Mm. And then the next summer was out west.
Wow.
And now I didn't get to go on those trips because I was old enough to be working.
Oh, yeah.
And I wanted a vehicle, so I needed to be working.
Yeah.
So I actually, after I heard about some of those trips and I knew that how much room there was in the camper, those may have been some of my favorite summer trips.
Yeah.
Was when they were on
when
them.
They were gone.
And the house was maybe a little, yeah. Wasn't kept as
right.
The same way mom kept it.
We never really had big vacations. My grandparents took my cousin and I to California 1 year.
Wow, that's...
We drove. It was a 3-week trip.
That's everybody back then drove.
And I remember all we wanted to do was to get the stop with a swimming pool, you know, at night. And we took
find,
a lot
find
of our...
A mot- find a motel
yeah,
with a swimming
yeah,
pool.
Yeah, and we would always stop on the side of the road and eat. And my grandfather refused to stop, man. He was one of those guys, 4 a.m., wash your eyeballs, we gone. I remember we drove right by the Grand Canyon. He said we'd see it on the way back, and we never did. Yeah, he had it. You know, he was an old truck driver, and once he got in that car, we would drive dark.
Or he knew that he could get to this place by this time.
Right,
and man, you don't do it.
4 a.m. we were gone, and we'd drive till dark every day. And it took us about 3 or 4 days to get out there from Louisville, Kentucky, and then we'd go to the Smokies every once in a while.
Uh-huh.
But didn't have a lot of family vacations, really. Other than that, that was our big trip when we went to California for 3 weeks. And we did get to go to Disneyland out there and Knott's Berry Farm and all that. That was really – but that's – golly, Bill, that was in the 60s.
Yeah.
And but we never really
And then as a coach, it's really tough to be able to do anything that's going to take
a whole lot of time. My wife and I, and because of coaching, we always went to Florida in the summer. When the poor people go, we used to joke. In that break right after our football camp until about the 7th or 5th or 6th or right after the 4th, and then that was it. So we always took 2 weeks and go to Florida, which we still do if the hurricanes don't get us. But that was our family vacation as my wife and I and son. But, yeah, the California trip was really interesting. And we didn't have air conditioning. And my grandfather smoked a pipe.
Everybody didn't back
so
then.
So he smoked a pipe and burned up about 4 or 5 shirts on the way out there with the, you know, he always had the holes in his shirt. But that was fun. We'd stop on a side road and eat Vienna sausages and crackers, and we thought we had it made. I guess we did.
It was a big deal. There's no question about it. That's cool. I mean, if you've got some our listeners, if you've got any memories, things like that, that'd be sort of fun.
Yeah.
I mean, it's that time of year.
Never
now.
Made it to Europe, and you know, a lot of my friends in high school, you know, they'd go. Some of them, like the girls, would study over there in the summer, and I thought that was the worst thing in the world.
I wouldn't be studying.
No, me either. No. But of course, I always was involved in football. So, you know, in high school, we tried to train as little bit as we could. You know, and like you said, I had to work too. So, my junior and senior year in high school, I was working. So. In the paper mill factory.
Ooh. Oh wow,
that was tough. Hot.
Yeah, I mean, I
inland container.
I did whatever I could do, and then I worked the summer before my senior year. I worked for my grandfather.
Yeah,
he was the Pure Oil distributor. Okay. In South Alabama, Northwest Florida. And I worked my way up to being able to drive the small tanker, you know, the one where it wasn't the cab and tanker.
I
it was you. One, you know, the smaller ones. And, you know, I was mostly delivering diesel to a lot of the farmers and things like that. And to the stations that carried diesel as well. And everything went well till, until right toward the end, what you had to do every day when you came back, you had to dump, if you had anything left, any fuel left, you had to dump it and then run, and then you'd run the lower grade gas through it and to sort of clean it out for whatever it was going to carry. If it was going to carry diesel or gas, and you'd leave the valve open. And then the next morning, you'd obviously come out, shut the valve before you put anything in. Yeah, I don't know what happened. I mean, one morning I came out, and I had started to fill the tanker up, and I guess I hadn't closed the valve.
Yep.
And I hear scream coming from the office and running out, and there is... This time it was gas. At least the gas evaporated was easier. We had to buy a truckload of sand.
Oh.
I had to buy a truckload of sand.
Yeah, you bought the sand
to cover the parking lot. But I mean, it would at least evaporate quicker and be less of a mess
than the diesel.
Than it would have been diesel.
Oh man!
But I mean, so that put a little dent
into my
summer earnings.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I worked all summer for my grandfather, and he drove. He was a guy that every year he traded one of his two vehicles. He had one, he'd have one, and my grandmother would have one. But every year he'd trade one of those two, so he never had a vehicle that was more than 2 years old. And he liked big engines.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember him having some of the last ones I remember were like a Buick Wildcat. And... he had a GTO. I mean,
your grandfather.
He liked. I mean, it needed to be. It needed to be well over 300. It needed to be better than a 350cc engine.
Wow.
I mean, you know, he wanted something that could go.
Yeah.
When he wanted to go, he wanted to go. And I remember riding with him. This was back before you had to wear seatbelts.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even remember if cars had seatbelts.
Maybe not
back then.
Maybe the little lap.
Yeah. You didn't have anything cross your shoulder.
No.
But I don't ever remember wearing seatbelt, but thinking, God, I wish there was something that could
hold on to.
Yeah, because he would drive so fast.
Oh, scary!
So, I was really excited about working that summer for him because I thought I'm gonna get a serious hot rod. And so I worked all summer. He didn't pay me. I didn't really get paid. It was like work all summer for my first vehicle.
Right.
So we drive 15 miles up to Bruton, where the car lot was.
Yeah.
And we go on the car lot, and man, there's a Mustang. Here's a Vet. I knew I wasn't getting a Vet. I mean, there are three or four really sharp sport cars. Yeah. I mean, there's a souped up Chevy 2. It's like, yeah, okay, I'm going to get one of these. And what do I get? I got a 1964 Bel Air.
Okay.
Four-door white.
Yep, I had a 64 white. Comet.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of those, yeah, the little old lady drove it to church.
Oh, yeah.
Once a week, yeah. Kind of thing. And, I mean, didn't have much get-up or whatever.
Yeah.
And I remember him telling me, your first one doesn't need to be something right. that you – I mean, he was right.
Yeah, yeah.
It didn't need to – but I was so disappointed.
I know, you wanted it.
Working all summer.
I know.
I always wondered, if I hadn't poured all that gas in the parking lot, would I have gotten something a little better? Maybe. All right.
You never know.
Yeah, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. We're going to talk some more summer. I want to get in some more summer thoughts, though. Be thinking about this, Don.
Okay.
I want you to think about some guys, because we talked about football's got big camps going on right now.
Yep.
I'd love for you to sort of think back on some camp memories, maybe a player or two that stood out that the first time you saw him at camps.
Yeah.
All right, sure. We'll do that and more. Love for you to join in the final half hour here on the Thursday Drive.
.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Someday I'll tell that story.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, crazy memories.
Right.
But we were talking, earlier, this is camp time mm-hmm. for a lot of different sports. I mean, basketball camps, but football camps going on. You've got – Auburn's got, a big 7-on-7 camp that's either going on or just ended. Obviously, there are a lot of official visitors coming in.
Yeah.
Camp time used to be really when you discovered – a lot of prospects.
Right. Back in the old days, we tried to get, like you just said, Bill, the top prospects or who we thought were going to be or were the top prospects, not only in state, but it's, Georgia, Florida, mm-hmm. Try to get them there. And that was really a big, big evaluation time for us. Not only that, you could spend time with them,
Because you got them captive.
Yeah, and that was the only time, that was legal for them to be here, and it's usually an overnight camp. And then we had the one-day camps, and then we would have what we called our prospect camp,
mm-hmm.
our senior camp, and that's when we really tried to get the top kids. And what we would do, we knew who was going to be there, and you always tried to match them up with the best defensive line prospects against the best offensive line prospects in the drills to see the competition and who we thought were the real deals. But that's all changed now with all – you can come as many times as you want to campus now. But they were fun. It was hard
work.
How
do you feel about that? It used to be. I mean, it was really a big deal
if you could
to be one of the five schools that was going to get an official visit.
Yeah, I mean, and you fought like crazy, and sometimes you'd get your heart broke when you had a guy coming in on Friday, and you get a call from usually his coach saying, "Well, Joe has decided he's going to Georgia this weekend or Alabama or." Clemson came in this week, and mm-hmm. The only time they can get him in, use that crap.
Oh, yeah.
But, you really fought to get those five visits, or one of the five visits, mm-hmm. I should say. Yeah, but the prospect camps were good for us. We had a lot of good players come through. I remember you asked me before the break. I remember Tommy Jackson really having a good camp.
Yeah.
And, we knew about Tommy. He was a good player, but he wasn't a huge, tall.
No, he was undersized.
Yeah, and he wasn't a big, super athletic-looking kid. Like nowadays, 6'4", 6'5".
Mm-hmm.
But he had a really good camp. Everybody loved it. Competitor.
Good motor. I mean, it
competitor
just,
and a great personality.
Oh, yeah.
And even though he was local, you still didn't really know. I mean, you couldn't get to know the kids, but we got to know him, and you know, we, you know, the rest is history with him. And yeah, but they were important to get those top, and wherever you recruited, you fought like crazy to get your top guys to camp.
Now, how the something that has changed. I mean, it just seems like it's players. It's harder, or let's put it this way: it's less likely that there are players who are just unnoticed the way it used to be.
Because
some kids couldn't make it to camp. All teams didn't go to camp.
Right.
So it seems like every team now just about has an opportunity with 7-on-7 or something to
and
be able to showcase
another,
their players.
You know, later in my career, we started those passing camps, remember?
Mm-hmm.
And those were big. And, you know, you used to fight like, hey, and the problem was you couldn't pay for any of that. See, they had to get there on their own.
Right.
And you had to find a good assistant coach at that school that you trusted and get them to bring them. And, but you couldn't give them money, you couldn't give them lodging, and that was tough.
Now, couldn't you use some of the coaches though as part of your camps as a little incentive for them?
That's how you did it. You would say, okay, Bill, you're going to bring Drew up, and we're going to let you work the camp, and you're going to make so much money and get room and board. And
that's a huge incentive a couple of ways. I mean, one, it's extra money.
Right.
But it's also giving you an opportunity to show that you might have what it takes to be able to move up to the college level.
Yeah, and a lot of those guys would work, and then they would try to become GAs. And that's back then, that was a great way to network and get your name out there. And a lot of those guys would work every camp in the country.
Oh, yeah.
They'd be gone all summer. And, you know, they'd work. And we'd say, you're not going to Alabama's camp. Oh, yeah, I got to go. But, you know, it was tough. But it was fun. But it's a lot easier now, I think. I think you can even pay for some guys to come to campus.
Yeah.
I don't know all the rules, so I shouldn't say. But it was tough. Man, I remember those days on that intramural field. Remember, it'd be so muddy.
Oh,
and
that
hot
was and that was an awful place to be out.
It'd be thousands of kids, dusty, and then
rocks.
Then we had to entertain the coaches
all
at night.
Yeah,
that was fun, but it wasn't fun the next day. We'd always take them to touchdowns and cook for them. And Coach Turbo treated the coaches great. He was the best ever. You know, we didn't make a whole lot of money at the camps, which a lot of coaches did.
Yeah.
And I talked to other coaches at other schools. Like, oh, we made so-and-so. I said, what? But, I mean, we made a little bit, but it wasn't about that. And that's what Coach said. He said, look, we want to get them on campus, take care of the coaches, take care of the kids. And, you know, that's the way it was. But,
well, yeah, I mean, well, the thing is, and you see results from that. I mean,
you need
to have that network of the, especially the in-state coaches.
Oh, yeah. You know, and Joe Witt did a great job, you know, getting all those kids up here from Mobile. And and then Eddie did a great job of getting guys from Miami to come up. And, you know, Junior Rosegreen, all them guys. They would bring busloads. I used to think, these guys are nuts. They'd get on a bus.
That is a long bus ride.
They'd stop, like, at Georgia's camp. They'd come to our camp. They might go to Alabama. They might go to Clemson in a bus. And they'd be gone for, you know, 10 days. But they were tough. They loved it. It's just, it was amazing. And we were all so happy that last camp day usually meant we were going on vacation. So we look forward to that.
Oh, I am sure. Yeah, that's great. I
that
mean,
was
just
a tough 10 days, though.
Yeah, I bet. I mean,
entertaining the coaches at night, and coaching it the next morning at 7 a.m. And you always had a duty walking back to the dorm. I hated that. All the way back to the dorm. You know, everybody had a duty.
Huh.
You, Don, today you got to check the food line. So I'd have to run down to the, you know, where we were serving the hamburgers for the players, the campers. But it was a lot of fun.
Oh, no question about it. All right, we're having fun here on the Thursday Drive. Love for you to join in, 334-321-1390. We'll get to our final break of the show, so come on in here on the Thursday Drive.
Thanks.